Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the Toe Meets Leather podcast. I'm Logan, and with us today, back from the abyss, Nigel. How are you doing today, Nigel?
I'm doing pretty good. It is good to be back. I've been busy with a couple of things, you know, work and special projects, and it's been fun, but definitely glad to be back on this lovely, lovely Sunday.
It's always good to see you, too. I see... Not at all eating loudly over there. What kind of chips are those? That thing was massive, man. Big chips.
Kettlebell. They're kettlebell chips or something. Yeah.
Big chips for a big man. All right. Well, let's get right down to it. So, Nigel, I know this time of year, football really isn't your bag. You're more into the MLB. Or politics, whichever suit floats your boat more. But I'm going to steer away from how much you hate Hillary Clinton for the moment. So let's talk about some of the other drafts and sports that are out there. Obviously, the NFL draft is coming up, and we've talked about that a little bit with Tommy and Ty. But for you, I know you've been interested a lot more in reading into the MLB draft in the past. And the NBA draft has always been a fascinating topic as well. So what differentiates those drafts for you? What makes each of them interesting?
Well, I guess I'll start with MLB just because the season just got started for them here actually this past week for those of you who do watch Major League Baseball. I think with their draft, it allows for more – and what people like to call tanking, I don't like to call it tanking. I don't even like to call it taking advantage of the system. For me, it's if your team isn't in a position to win a World Series and you feel like you have a lot of overpaid players, you can position your team very easily to give your young players experience and end up with a high draft pick. And because the record, it's a straightforward draft, and there's just – you know what your record's going to be and where you're going to end up. A lot of these teams will sell off overpriced players, maybe near the end of their contracts, maybe just players who are getting paid a certain amount and the team's not going anywhere. They're not going to make that big of a difference. So it allows for teams to kind of decide what decision they're going to make and what path they're going to take very easily, whether they're going to compete for a World Series or whether they're going to be in a rebuilding phase. Being a Braves fan, we're definitely in that rebuilding phase right now pretty heavily. I think with the NBA, the biggest thing that differentiates them in terms of their draft is, one, the guys you draft are going to have a very important role on the team very quickly, whether that be a Kevin Durant or a LeBron James. Those guys are going to make an instant impact. But also with the lottery system, losing the most games doesn't guarantee you the top pick. So you're going to have, you know, a lot of teams trying to lose the most games, position themselves, let me tell you, not lose the most games, position themselves the best for the draft, but that doesn't guarantee them that superstar where there's one, maybe two every draft that's going to really make an impact. You also have the interesting situation where in MLB, you can't trade first-round picks, where in the NBA, you can. So you have some teams that have 2 and 3 first-round picks in a draft where there's only 2 rounds, where MLB, you can't trade the first-round picks. You can trade the new supplemental round picks. And that came into effect last year. But, you know, you're also talking about a draft where you have, you know, 50 rounds of picks going on. So, you know, just very big differences there. You can say the same thing for the NFL. Not only can you trade the picks, not only does your record directly affect where you end up, except unless there's a tie situation where there's a coin flip, but those guys are going to make instant impacts. So you get a little bit of more of that NBA style of draft and that instant impact guy. So, you know, I think MLB definitely stands out. They definitely have one of the more, you know, I hate to say it, but boring drafts. And I think a lot of that boringness comes from, whereas in the NBA and the NFL, this guy's going to be on the field next year unless something happens to him or unless he just needs more seasoning. But the MLB, those guys work in the minor leagues. You might not see this guy for 3 or 4 years. You don't know if he's going to make it. You don't know how good he's going to be. all the scouts and all the statisticians can go crazy and say this guy has all the measurables and this and that. And you just don't know. No, it's not an exact science. None of it's an exact science, but MLB is definitely far from an exact science.
So the MLB also has the advantage of the fact that they have probably the best development system of all the majors. I can't speak to the NHL, but I know the NFL really doesn't have a development league. And the NBA, I guess the D-League would count as that, but really most players are just going to keep their contractual obligations and ship themselves overseas because they're going to make more money over there anyway, and they'd rather not stick around just to not get paid. But so for the MLB, it makes sense. And like you said, it's beneficial to have those first-round draft picks stay to yourself. That way you're guaranteed to maintain your status, you know, get your first pick based on the location that you finished the last season at. Now, when you talk about tanking, though, I was kind of intrigued that you didn't bring up the NBA, because I think a lot of the key examples or the key teams that people think of as being tankers would be like the 76ers or, you know, there's a few other teams in the NBA that come to mind that just seem to stay at the bottom tier year in, year out, you know, maybe Sacramento, other programs. But you don't usually see it in the same way as you would in the MLB, because in the MLB, it's basically we're trading away players to ensure that we maintain a bad record, whereas in the NBA, they just don't seem to try and get better. Is there a real science to trying to get the first pick in these two different drafts?
I would say with MLB, they, like, you know, and we stated before, they have a little bit more control. If you have the worst record, you're going to get the first pick. So if there's a really transcendent talent coming through, then you definitely can position yourself a little bit more. And that happened, strangely, for the Nationals 2 years in a row, where they got Steven Strasburg and Bryce Harper, two drafts in a row, which was crazy. You know, and then for the Astros, you know, getting Carlos Correa, they were able to kind of, you know, take advantage of the system that's in place. And unfortunately, that is part of it, that you're taking advantage of the system. The 76ers, they're looking for that true transcendent talent. There is no exact science. I think they have, if I'm standing correct, they have potential for three first-round picks this year. If they get the Lakers pick, which falls out of the top three, and then they have their own pick, which will be, I think, a top three pick, then they would have two top four picks. So, I mean, there is no exact science. I guess the best way to position yourself the best in terms of the NBA is to gather first-round picks of teams that are really bad, which is really hard to do because those teams should be trading their first-round picks. But you see teams like the Celtics that have the Brooklyn Nets picks for the next couple of years, and the Brooklyn Nets are just atrocious. So, you know, when you see that happening, it's really – a lot of teams that are good or maybe think they're good enough, mortgaging their future, and then a lot of those players get older and those picks are still owed. So what ends up happening is those players, you know, the lottery in the NBA draft is set up to replenish older players on a team, but if you're mortgaging so much of your future, then what ends up happening is instead of that young influx of talent, somebody else is getting that young influx of talent, maybe on top of established stars. So, you know, I don't think there's a real science in the NBA, but Major League Baseball, they have their collective bargaining agreement actually coming up this year. It ends. So maybe that's something you're going to try to tackle. I just don't want to use the word tanking in the MLB because, almost in the NBA too, if your team, the goal of any team should be to win a championship. If your team is not positioned to win a championship, and you have two or three people on your team that are making $15 million each, and they're just kind of those guys who are going to get people in the seats but really aren't going to get to a championship. And the Hawks were in the situation, funny enough, a couple years ago, where they had Joe Johnson and they had Josh Smith. And they realized very quickly, well, we have Al Horford and Jeff Teague, and those guys will be good in a couple of years here. Let's surround them with players that we can afford to pay, and we can be patient with them, and let's get rid of Joe Johnson. Let's not re-sign Josh Smith. And I thought that was a great strategy because they had perennially been in the eighth or seventh spot in the East, and that wasn't going to get them a championship. They knew that. If you're 7 and 8 in the East in the NBA per se, are you're basically just making the playoffs and your team is old, that should tell you right then and there it's time to let go. Because if your team is a young team making it, that's a sign of achievement. But if I see an old team doing that, I don't think too many older teams are going to be able to go on the road constantly, round after round, and make it to an NBA championship.
Well, and that's another thing. You see teams be consistently bad, both in the NBA and in the NFL. You know, you see teams like Cleveland, the Jaguars, they don't seem to improve year in, year out. Whereas in the MLB, you'll see a lot of these teams where they start bad, kind of like you brought up. Washington was terrible for 2 years. They got the top picks, you know, Bryce Harper, Steven Strasburg. Those are names you recognize. And they skyrocketed. They've been one of the biggest talents in baseball since. But a lot of the times you'll see these first picks in the NBA or in the NFL, and it doesn't make a difference for the team. It doesn't have that drastic change that they desire. And yet at the same time, a lot of the teams won't try to get better because they're depending on those first-round draft picks to kind of have an impact or to draw in a crowd, to bring in a name to their program that people will want to see. Kind of like a Johnny Manziel, even though it didn't really work out that way for Cleveland. I do respect, like, what you said about Atlanta. Their management knew right away, you know, we've clearly got talent here. We're an 8 seed in the East, but we're not going to get any better by keeping the same pieces around. So they made an active move to try and improve themselves. But that's such a rare thing to see in a lot of these leagues. I think some of the few teams that do it would be maybe New England or heck, I'm trying to think of another team. Maybe the Giants and the Steelers. I have a hard time thinking of a lot of teams that take advantage of a system like that. Why do you think there's that dichotomy, though, of teams not trying to get better?
I feel like it's definitely management and personnel play a big decision in that. Cleveland should be better than they are. If it wasn't this last year, they obviously lost Alex Mack on the line to the Falcons of all teams, so I think the Falcons are going to see immediate dividends from that because I think he's one of the best top five centers in the league for me, as long as he stays healthy. Cleveland had one of the best offensive lines that I've ever seen in terms of PFF grades past 2 years. Everybody knows about Joe Thomas, but like I said, with Alex Mack, they had a couple other guys on the line that had done really well. And my thought process was they could never get a QB that they could depend on. And it's funny. What are we talking about at Johnny Manziel? The best QB from that draft maybe have taken in the second round, and it's almost fucking hilarious that the guy who may be the best QB taken in that in the second round, the reason he dropped off a lot of people's boards was because his brother came in, sucked ass because there was no talent around him. But people were so scared that the same thing was going to happen that they didn't draft him. And I think that's funny that we always place it on the QB, but I'm like, if he doesn't have any wide receivers to throw to, he doesn't have a running back who can take pressure off of him, he doesn't have an offensive line that can protect him, he ends up on the ground every other play. People always want to look at these key marquee positions, but you see a lot of teams that have perennial success, like the Patriots, like the Steelers, like the Ravens. They know who they are, and they draft according to need, not just the guy that's going to be the marquee name. Matt Ryan went into an ideal situation. They had an offensive line that was established. They had a running back, Michael Turner, who they had just gotten from San Diego. That was just brilliant. They knew, they're like, we can't have our rookie QB throwing 30 times a game because he's going to end up hurt. We need a running back who's going to be able to pound the ball. We have Roddy White who can throw to.
Which, oddly enough, is the situation that Matt Ryan is in now, throwing 30 times.
Crazy, right? But the thing is, he's definitely more mature, right? So hopefully he can handle that increased pressure. And that's just crazy that a lot of these QBs get put in these very bad positions, and then people think they're a bust. But, you know, Johnny Manziel wasn't an ideal position per se, in terms of the scheme and style, but he should have done better than he did. I think if Derek Carr had gone to the Browns, he'd be having as much or more success than he's having with the Raiders. That's how good I think he is, because the Raiders, when they went in, they said, well, we don't have as many great wide receivers, but we do have a running back in Latavius Murray who will be able to at least take some pressure off of him. We have an offensive line that's one of the top offensive lines in the league. We have our defense that will be able to keep us at least in games. And then this year, this past year that we saw, what do? They're like, okay, he's protected on the line. Our defense is decent, but it could be better. But let's get this guy some weapons. Let's get him some people he can be familiar with. And what did they do? They're like, we're going to take him a tight end. We're going to take him a wide receiver. We're going to get offensive line help. We're going to, you know, sign another wide receiver in free agency. They're like, let's get this kid some toys. And that's how you have to do. It's not just getting that one guy that's marquee. You have to surround people with talent. Tom Brady has been as successful as he has, not because it's just Tom Brady. We're going to get him tight ends that can do this. We're going to get him wide receivers that know our scheme and necessarily fit our scheme. And you see these teams with great personnel, with great front office personnel, they're making these decisions that people think are crazy and just turn out to be great. Pagers released Wes Welker. People are like, oh, what are they doing? And then what do? They replace him with Julian Edelman, who's turning out to be even better than
Wes Welker.
And he turns out to be really good. So that's the thing. Like, the teams that are successful, it's front office that makes all the decisions that just, you know, people want to take from those teams because, like, that team knows what they're doing in terms of front office personnel. My own team, the Detroit Lions, actually just picked up a Patriot guy to be their GM. And he has made sweeping changes in terms of anything from hiring a chef to, you know, changing some of the tactics that go into the locker room, hiring new strength and conditioning coach. And those things don't, people are like, oh, those things don't matter as much. They do. And if the Patriots are doing it, 9 times out of 10, you probably need to be doing it in some way, shape, or form. You see teams like the Steelers doing it. You see teams like the Ravens doing it. Those teams that really have that longevity. They hit on every pick. I think the difference when a team is between a team being good and great, you can't just hit on your first round pick. You have to hit on the first and the second and the third. And the second and third guy is going to be the ones that make the differences that can turn out to make your team really great. So,
well, and the other thing I see with a lot of those big programs is they don't buy into their own publicity. I think a lot of these teams are getting told, you know, well, we got to take a quarterback this year. You know, I think, like, Cleveland, like we said, they just went out, they got RG3. That's not a bad quarterback, but they're getting told, well, they need to take a first-round quarterback with their draft this year. Dallas Cowboys are getting told they need to take a quarterback with their first-round draft pick this year. A lot of these teams that are getting told that they need to make these big-time picks don't end up delivering because, like you said, they don't have the surrounding characteristics, whereas a lot of these teams, they're like, well, we've built up this program for a long time. I'm not going to put all our chips on one guy. I'm going to go out and draft something to put around him. And then when the time comes, we can take a big name talent if he's on the board, which this year, I think you look at it, there really isn't a lot of talent at the QB or heck at a lot of offensive positions. So yeah.
And that'll be key. Who's going to reach? There's always a team every year that it never fails that reaches, right? And that happens in every draft. It happens in every draft, in every league. There's always a team that reaches. And the first team to reach is going to be the one who says, oh crap, that's the pick that we regret. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I think the teams that are truly great, whether that be, and if you're talking about the NBA, you're talking about Golden State Warriors, you're talking about the San Antonio Spurs, you're talking about, you know, the Oklahoma City Thunder, you see the Minnesota Timberwolves. Yeah, a high pick is necessary to kind of be fortuitous, but their front offices are just beautiful in everything that they do. They're ahead of everybody in terms of scouting. They're looking at they're turning over every rock and just doing all this new stuff that people want to copy and emulate. And, you know, I think the thing is going to be, you know, for any team that has perennially bad seasons, the 76ers, the Browns, they have to make sweeping changes and they have to be okay was being bad for a short amount of time. The Browns, I think, picked up a good head coach. The key for them will be, are they going to be – you've been bad for so long. Let's not put a clock on Jackson and say you have to be good in the next 3 years after three drafts. Like, you need to give him time. Give him time to implement his success. I'm glad they gave him – I'm glad that he – before he even started the job, he says, I don't want Johnny Manziel here because he's a distraction. I do not want to tie my horse to that. I do not want to tie my cart to that horse. I'm so glad they said, yes, it's okay that he's gone. Because if they decided to keep him right there as a head coach before I came in, I would have already known that that's not the ideal situation for me. Because they feel like that one first-round pick is more important than their head coach, who the head coach should be making all the decisions.
It becomes a publicity show. You've got what's going on in the NBA at Cleveland, which is the coach isn't really running the show. You've got a player running the show because he's the one that's bringing all the people in.
And it's crazy that LeBron James is still running fuck amok. And the thing is that if I'm a coach and free, and then next year they decide not to keep Tyronn Lue, I would be like, I can't do it because LeBron's not a player anymore. He's a player coach. And either you let him be coach or there's no newbie coach who would say to himself, I'm going to sign on to that. And LeBron's going to run amok. If I had a team and LeBron came to me and was like, I want to be on your team. I'm like, if you hire LeBron, if you're the owner, you put LeBron on this team, I have to go because I can't let him run me out of town like he ran David Blatt out of town.
Well, seriously. So,
you know, it'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting. Any team that want to break the mold, 76ers actually just got rid of their GM, Hinkley. So, you know, all these teams, like, you want to see them do well because some of these teams have such great history. But you also know to yourself, you have to be willing to make the changes that you need. You know, we talked about our Raiders bet last year. We talked about that quite frequently. And the reason that was exciting for me was because the Raiders have a lot of history. A lot of people, you know, our age and younger don't know how good the Raiders used to be.
Oh, but no, I saw
what the Raiders were building, and I'm like, I'm excited for them as a fan base. They are putting some key pieces in place and drafting really well.
That whole division now is going to be one of the strongest in the NFL. The Chargers might be the weakest part of it at all, and they're still going to be incredible once they come back from all the injuries they had last year. So, you know, that's going to be a heck of a show, especially if, like you said, Oakland keeps putting together what they've been working towards.
You know, we haven't talked about MLB that much, but, you know, I give kudos to the Astros. Astros were, you know, a doormat there for a while, but they had faith in their system. They took advantage of what was in front of them, and they said, we're going to get rid of some of these older guys that aren't being as productive, and we're going to invest in the future. They had some faith in some players that maybe people were like, oh, I don't know why you have faith in that player, but, you know, like a Jose Altuve, that guy's like 5'6", maybe, and, you know, people are like, oh, he'll never be successful in the league. He'll never be successful in the league, and the Braves actually have a player very akin to that, which is funny. You know, the people who can play and play well, you'll find a way to get them in your system. And that's something from the Patriots mindset. You'll find a way to get good players into your system, and they'll fit and do what they need to do. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. You look at another team that's kind of got that same mentality. The Royals, who've been in the World Series 2 years in a row now, they weren't always that good. They came out of nowhere for a lot of people. And I think they did it in a way that I certainly respect it. It's been that money ball mentality, very small ball, very take advantage of your, you know, your averages, your on-base percentage, your runs, your steals. And they've done amazing things with that program. And they're going to be a powerhouse for a long time because they've had one of the best development programs in the MLB for, gosh, as far back as I can remember, at least the past decade or so.
No, you're exactly right. Outside of, I think, Lorenzo Cain and Aceetus Escobar, I think all their players are homegrown. They're the right fielder, Alex Rios. But outside of that, so, you know, you're talking about a lot of your everyday players are guys that you drafted, you developed, that, you know, you worked on and were patient with. That's awesome. I think that's just awesome. And that shows that you have to have faith in the process. The Royals know they had been bad for a long time, but they had to have faith in the process. The fans did. And I wish I, and that's a note to all fans. You have to have faith in the process. Not trying to get caught up in the 76ers process, because I thought that was stupid from the get-go. But as long as your team is developing young players, putting them in position to win, instilling culture, I think any time, and I don't like him at all, but Teddy Bruschi said it, and it can be more, if, whenever you go into the Patriots locker room, you get with the culture or you got to get the fuck out. And anytime you have that veteran mindset or just that mindset as an organization, this is how we do things. If you can't get on board, you have to go. I think that's awesome, because people are trying to put themselves in a position to win, but everybody has to be willing to make the sacrifices to get there.
Well, that's the only other thing I would say, is that it's not necessarily the draft. It's that winning mentality that keeps a lot of those teams where they are. You know, the Jaguars, you got to wonder what those guys are taking the field for when your GM is putting film of other teams on your scoreboard, because it's so boring to come to your games now. You know, when they started putting NFL Red Zone in there, it's like, okay, so clearly they're not expecting us to compete or even win games at this point. And, you know, the Browns, there's a lot of other teams that struggle, but you've got to instill that winning mentality. Anyway, we're kind of getting away from the draft here. I'd like to wrap it up real fast. So I looked back over the average pay grade for the NFL, the NBA, and the MLB. So the NFL average is about $5.15 million. NBA is $5 million, and the MLB is $3.3 million right now. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Nigel. If you were a player going into the pros, first off, which draft would you like to come out of? And second off, when you get that first big paycheck, say you were a first round pick, what would you spend it on?
The draft I would like to come out of, as you know, I'm in love with MLB The Show. I love it. I love their journey mode so much. I probably played it like 20 times under so many different situations. I know. I would say the MLB draft. And here's why. Because if you come up directly out of high school and it doesn't work out for you, you're usually maybe 22, 23, 24, 25, maybe something like that. You got a lot of life ahead of you. And you got that one signing check as a first-round pick. And that's more than most people make in a lifetime. So your body's not too hurt in terms of, like, the NBA playing so many games all over the place. And definitely not the NFL, where your pay is definitely guaranteed. Yeah. So I think that's the one. And my first paycheck would definitely go towards – two things. First, all my debt, which I'm looking at myself in my current scenario, just all my debt, which is not that much, but you definitely want it gone. And then I've definitely got to get me a Tesla Model S. Everybody knows how much I love them.
I was about to say, if you don't...
so bad, and that definitely would be my first major purchase.
I was about to be very disappointed if you didn't bring up the Tesla. I was like, oh yeah, sure, pay off your school debt. Oh, do what everybody else does. God, you think Shaquille O'Neal, when he got drafted, that was his first thought? He's like, you know what? I should pay off all my school debt. No, he was buying cars for all his friends. So you're saying if you get drafted, you're not going to buy a Tesla for me? That's not nice.
Get you some, Logan. I'll get you something. I'll get you a new set of clubs. I know how much you like to play golf.
Yeah, I think if I got that big paycheck, first thing would probably be a big vacation. I'd take all my family and all my homies. You know, go somewhere nice. I don't know. We keep talking about Ireland, but I think I'd rather take them somewhere like Switzerland or something. Some nice, snowy. And then, I'd probably buy like a really nice car. I don't know. Probably not a Bugatti, but maybe like a BMW. I think that would be nice.
I like how you're like, I want to go from a car that's like $1.3 million to like... a car that's like 80,000. Like, like that's a big drop off. I don't need a Bugatti. I just need a BMW.
I want to be realistic. Like, look, man, I got to live off this money. Come on. Don't make the mistake that a lot of these other players are making. Come on.
Wait, you don't want to be like Cespedes and have like three cars that are like ridiculously overpriced and super tricked out? And you bring a new one to spring training every day?
Dude, I saw Dennis Schroeder's car, which is like an Audi 8, which is gold plated on the outside. And he locked his keys inside his car, so he had to get like the company to come deliver him new keys. I'm like, I can't imagine how expensive that would be. Jeez.
No one's breaking in. No one's breaking in a gold car.
Like, yeah, and I was like, he can't afford to bust the windows into something like that. It's like, oh, that would cost more than to replace than getting a new car. Jeez.
Well, that's the thing. I was listening to Ludacris on the radio one time, and he was like, you know, he has a Rolls Royce Phantom, and he was like, the tires, one tire for his Rolls Royce Phantom was like a couple $1,000s.
Yeah.
Because they're such specially made tires. It's like, to even upkeep a very nice car is fucking expensive. You're not just buying the car. You got to keep it up. You got to take it to a special dealer in terms of every little knock and ding you hear and all that stuff. And you got to get it detailed constantly because you can't have a nice car and it be ugly and dirty. That makes no sense, right?
No. So. Yeah. You got to keep it clean. My gosh, man. What kind of sick person wouldn't keep a nice car like that clean? Yeah, and it's part of your status symbol, you know. If you get a nice car and then you let it get all grimed up, it's like, what does that say about you, man? Oh, it's terrible.
I like your vacation idea, by the way. I like that. I think that was good.
Well, and that's kind of a dangerous thing because it's that trick you get yourself into. You start showing that off to your friends and they're like, well, this is the lifestyle you're going to be living now that you're with me who's making big bucks. And I guess that's the downside of going to the NFL because, like, you could get injured in practice, and you would never see that money again. Like, that would suck. But, yeah, I don't know. I like your plan developing in the MLB, you know, since they would give you that time. And a lot of people do get drafted out of high school, of all people. How did Joshua's brother turn out? We never found out, did we?
No, and I think it's his cousin. I do not know. We definitely need to find out because we could keep up with him, see where he is in the minors. I need to text him and see where his cousin ended up so we can definitely, most definitely find out where in the minors he ended up. And I know he's in the Reds organization, but as we all know, they're like 15 levels to minor league baseball.
So many.
That doesn't say a lot.
Oh, God. You know what that just reminded me, though? I would also become an investor like Hank Aaron, and I would buy myself a Waffle House. That would be on my list.
That is actually, you know what you should buy into? You should buy into Chick-fil-A. They have like the lowest entry cost for a franchise.
Yeah, but they have like background checks for getting for being in Chick-fil-A. It's like worse than getting a passport. They're like, dude, you have to have lived the clean, you know, super religious life for years.
Logan, what have you done in your life that would not allow you to pass Chick-fil-A background check?
I don't know, man. You know what? You know all the horrible things I've done in our fraternity, okay? We don't talk about those
things. Where all the bodies are buried.
All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and end it since we're getting into that information. Thanks again to all our listeners for keeping up with us. If you have any questions you'd like us to talk about, feel free to shoot us an email at toemeatleather@gmail.com. Again, that is toemeatleather@gmail.com. And Nigel, thank you as always for being able to make it. And I wish you the best of luck this rest of your weekend. Your lips are moving, but I can't hear what you say.
I say I wish you the same, sir.
All right. Have a good rest of your weekend, everybody. Good night.